At the bottom of Robertson Street, by the corner with the Broomielaw, rises the dome of the Clydeport building. Freelance architect Neil Murphy takes us around the building, which was designed by Glasgow's third and often underrated great architect.
This is the Clydeport building, otherwise known as the Clyde Navigation Trust building. So this is a superb piece of Ecole des Beaux-Arts Baroque, a really fantastic building by one of the very best architects in Glasgow. Glasgow's got two incredibly well-known architects, Charles Rennie Mackintosh and Alexander Greig Thompson. But there's a third neglected figure, which is Sir J.J. Burnett, who didn't get his knighthood for nothing. And this building is in two phases. So the first five bays are with the giant pediment that we can see in front of us. And then if you look at the corner, you can see the very large dome, and that's the later phase. So the first phase dates from 1882 to 1886, and then the later phase dates from 1906 to 1908. But what we're seeing now is only two stages of what were meant to be four stages. So it was meant to be a much, much bigger building. But unfortunately, because of the First World War, the later phases didn't happen. Another thing that we're not seeing, which was one of the original tensions behind the building, was where the corner dome is. There was originally going to be an enormous clock tower, which was going to mark effectively the port on the Clyde. But that didn't happen in the end. The Trust changed their minds and decided to go for a domed corner instead. Now, what's interesting about Sir J.J. Burnett is he's really important because he is the link between Scottish architecture and American architecture, and that link happens at the École des Beaux-Arts in Paris. He's the very first Scottish architect who gets to go to the École des Beaux-Arts in Paris, and that was a really radical thing for his family to do. He comes from an architectural dynasty. His father is John Burnett Sr., who does very many buildings across Glasgow as well. And what happens is that John Burnett decides to send his son to the Royal Academy in London, but the head of the Royal Academy in London, who's a guy called Vennie Spears, tells John Burnett Sr. that no, if he really wants the absolute top-of-the-line education for his son, he should send him to the École des Beaux-Arts in Paris, which is what he does. And J.J. Burnett ends up going to Paris at the age of 15 in 1872 to be interviewed for the École des Beaux-Arts and gets a place. And so this piece of work that you're seeing here, this just shows how incredibly accomplished his education was, because in 1882, he was only 25 years old. So even younger than Mackintosh when he started on the art school. So a really accomplished piece of work. And what's really interesting about this is how much he's able to digest the orders and the classical language and really make it his own. So there's really interesting, quirky details all over it, not just the sculpture, the things like the huge boat prows that come out, which mark the entrance on the building, which are really kind of Roman detail. Now, all of that gets picked up and repeated. If you look at the capitals along the building, these are composite capitals. So he's made them up. So this shows how inventive he is, because you will see that in each of those capitals, the prow of the ship emerges, and the spirals around them, they're almost like this boat emerging from a wave. Really interesting capitals. And then beyond that, the whole sculptural program tells you all about the building. For instance, and there are two phases of sculpture, I should emphasize this, that the first phase of sculpture on the stage one of the building is all by John Mossman, and the later phase is all by another man called Albert Hemstock Hodge. So the first phase, right at the top, it tells you absolutely about itself. It's Poseidon. He's sitting in a little boat being pulled by two seahorses, and then underneath him, as a kind of sort of almost roadkill, the boat kill, I suppose, is his son Triton, who is emerging out from underneath the boat, and you can see him just underneath. So that's surmounting the whole building. So it's telling you it's all about the sea. And then directly below that as well, you have this really elaborate, beautiful pediment, which is full of detail. And in the center of that, sitting on his throne, is Father Clyde. And to either side of that are the two hemispheres of the world, the East and the West Hemisphere. And so these are people offering gifts to Father Clyde. So it's all about trade. And then if we go to the corner, it gets even more elaborate. You've got some really superb new sculpture there by Albert Hemstock Hodge, who does some really interesting pieces. So again, it all picks up on the theme of Poseidon. So on the side of the building that is sitting on Robertson Street, what you have is Demeter leading a bull. Now, Demeter is the Greek god for harvest. So there's really beautiful detail on this. She's holding a corn leaf, and the bull is actually sitting on a bed of really dense, thick grass, and all her drapery and everything about it, she's really beautifully done. It's a very Michelangelian piece of sculpture, which Burnet was very much, that was what really appealed to him. That was the kind of style that he liked. And then on the other side of the building, the side that faces the Brumilo, you've got Amphitrite, who's being pulled along by seahorses, and she's the wife of Poseidon, so again, it all links back to Poseidon. And on the other side, Demeter and the bull is actually a reference to Zeus. So again, this is all to do with trade, and Amphitrite is actually holding a cork, which is part of engineering. So it's all to do with the things that were happening in Glasgow at the time. And then if we go back onto the Robertson Street facade of the building, you've got a series of sculptures that sit along the parapet of the building. So there are three sculptures, and these are all key Glaswegians, key important people that are associated with the Clyde. So right on the north end of the building, you've got Thomas Telford, who is holding a huge scroll of plans. So he was absolutely instrumental in forming harbours along the Clyde and in deepening the Clyde. And then you've got the next figure along just on the other side of the pediment is James Watt. So, and he's standing next to his condenser, which was the creation that, the invention that really improved the efficiency of steam engines in the Industrial Revolution. And that was the invention he came across quite by accident one day, stumbling across Glasgow Green and seeing how the woman in the steamies worked the steam to try and clean the clothes. So, and that was where he got the idea from that from. So there it is represented on the Clydes. That's his great invention. And then the next one along, which is by then, this is in the new phase of the building, that's Henry Bell. So you can see him holding a model of the boat, and that's his boat, the Comet, the boat that launched all the trade on the Clyde. So it's an incredibly accomplished piece of work, really sophisticated, and all of that continues inside as well. It's a really superb interior. The first phase has got a really spectacular staircase that takes you up to the main level of the building. And that staircase is all decked out in golds and yellows and browns. It's actually, it's probably the best Wally tiled stair in Glasgow. It's really quite spectacular. And those are Burnet's favourite colours. That's what he liked to work in. So it's one of the very few existing interiors that's left by him that hasn't been untouched in Glasgow. And it takes you all the way up to the main floor of the building, the third floor. And that has the whole series of halls that were associated with the Clyde Navigation Trust. And when you go through into the new part of the building, it has a beautiful sequence of domed spaces, very kind of very small, elegant domes, which are very much like the English architect Sir John Soane. And they take you through in kind of a rhythm, a repeating rhythm that takes you through into the huge hall with a dome right at the end of the building that's sitting overlooking the Clyde. And how Burnet constructs that space is really interesting, because he actually shifts the axis of the building internally at that point so that you rotate around to look down and along the Clyde. And it's a really sophisticated corner composition, that the way the whole thing is constructed. You have this dome sitting in what is essentially a concave and a convex curve, and it kind of embraces the whole thing with the two pieces of sculpture either side. And this is also kind of key to Burnet's thinking, because the thing that he learned at the École des Beaux-Arts was that everything had to come back to his initial sketch, which is called an esquisse. And that he was really innovative in this regard. You kind of did your little doodle sketch, and everything, all of the progress that you did on your design thereafter, all had to refer back to that little sketch. And so what he actually got his office manager to do in his office was to construct an early kind of idea of a photocopier where he could enlarge and scale down things. So when he actually came up with the final elevations of his building, he would scale them all down to the size of his original equesse. And then he'd be able to compare the two. And if they didn't work, he would actually scrap the design and start the whole thing again. He was that kind of dedicated to getting a good result. And the result of that was that Sir J.G. Burnet didn't make any money in his studio, because he was so dedicated to the pursuit of good architecture. And it is all summed up within this building. Now, what's also interesting is if you can kind of imagine the impact of this building on the Brumilo back in Victorian and Edwardian times. Now, at that time, the Brumilo would have been much, much lower scale than what we see today. It would be more like, and this is probably treading on thin ice here, much more like Leith than we see it here today. It was much more a collection of Georgian and early Victorian buildings and much smaller scale, with the exception of the Siemens Mission, which was on further along the Broomielaw, which had a big tower on it, but not as big as what was intended for Clydeport. So Clydeport basically sat astride all of this, much, much bigger in scale and much more impressive in scale as you're coming down the Clyde. Now, when you're looking at it nowadays on the Broomielaw, something about that scale is slightly lost. The detail is absolutely exquisite compared to the other buildings on the Broomielaw, but the mass of the other buildings now step up and away from Clydeport, so it's become slightly more in the background than was originally intended. It would have been a very emphatic, a very obvious presence on the Clyde.